Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It is Sunday, December 2nd, 2012, as we record this. I'm Sam Minter. And for the beginning of the show, I do not have Yvonne Bo with me. I do have Bruce Morton.
Hello.
Hello, Bruce. And for those of you who don't remember, Bruce was on a little while ago, before the election, to talk a little bit about Gary Johnson. Today we got a couple different things to talk. As I've mentioned on the last few weeks, Bruce is going to talk about Windows 8 and his experiences with it. But before we even get into that, Bruce and I yesterday went to a thing. For some of you who may remember, I've mentioned on the show a couple times. I went through this process and I'd call it elected, but I was unopposed to a position called a PCO, a precinct committee officer, in the local Republican Party, which was a kind of oddball thing for me to do. But yesterday was the...
I twisted your arm on that.
No. Yeah, Bruce twisted my arm a little bit. But it was the organizational meeting that follows the election to sort of determine what the county officers of the Republican Party will be for, what, the next 2 years?
Yes, next 2 years.
And
before you get into details, yeah. I gotta tell you something. I thought it was hilarious. I go in there. I've never met you, but you know what I look like. And I go in there and I'm looking for some guy with glasses and a beard, and because that's all I see on your on your Twitter profile or so I'm sitting down and since I only have this one little picture of just your super close up of a face, it's kind of like
For those of you who haven't seen it, my Twitter icon and such is like a super hyper close up that basically shows like my eyes and nose and maybe some of my mouth.
Imagination to see what the rest of you looks like, and I have just my imagination is that items in this mirror are bigger than they appear, and I imagine there's like this really heavy big guy. So, and I was totally wrong.
Well, I could stand to lose a few pounds, but
no, you're fine. I'm looking around for you, and then you send me an email.
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever heard of tapping on someone's shoulder? You're sitting three rows in front of me. Quote.
So I mean, you were three rows in front of me. I had tried to wave at you earlier, but you were like engrossed in conversation with some other people. And I'm like, oh, whatever, he's in conversation. So I'll just toss him a quick note. And hey, it got your attention. You saw me later.
yesterday.
Anyway, so this is for those who have absolutely no idea what we're talking about, I guess the parties have these internal structures. I mean, everybody thinks of presidential candidates, senatorial candidates, whatever. But there's this whole local infrastructure of sort of activists who at the very local level, at the county or lower, go around organizing stuff, trying to get out the vote when it's election time. But in between are trying to affect the platform of the party and the leadership of the party sort of from the ground up. And this is where that happens, I guess. Every 2 years, electing sort of who's going to be the representatives of each party, and this was the Republicans, at the county level and at the legislative district level. And these are folks who sort of help determine what the rules will be for how candidates get selected in the first place, how primaries and caucuses are going to work, and all that kind of thing, right? That's basically the purpose of all this.
Yeah, one way to think of it is that every 2 years, the Republican Party gets totally reorganized from the ground up, and the PCOs elect leaders and at the county level, and the leaders at the county level select leaders at the state level, and I think the state leaders all around the country choose who the national DN or RNC head is. Uh-huh. So you could think of it that whole process started yesterday.
Right. So I mean, I have as sort of a first time participant in anything really like this. I have some thoughts, but I know you've been around a couple times on this kind of thing. So without getting into the specifics and details that nobody will care about, what's your thought about this whole process?
Well, it's amazingly frustrating and slow. The people who are running the show really have don't appear to have any thought or concern about the time that all those hundreds of people are dedicating, and they wonder why people don't show up to these meetings. Yeah, you know, even of the elected PCOs.
There goes my kid. Okay, go ahead.
I think only about half of them show up for the RERG meeting, and the reason why is because it's so immensely frustrating. That meeting should have only lasted like 2 hours,
if that. Now tell me, so what you're talking about basically is their procedures for, you know, approving the rules and then debating the rules and nominating all the people who are going to run for these offices, and then everybody gets speeches and then you vote, and it's old fashioned. You write names on paper and turn them in, and then people count them. And then if nobody has a majority, you drop somebody and you do it again. And it goes on and on and on and on. Now, how much of this do you think is, you mentioned the people running it wonder. I don't want to get conspiratorial, but like, do you think part of it is intentionally obtuse so that only the really dedicated people get involved?
No, I don't. I think it's just incompetence. I think the ones who are at the top, they love this stuff. They eat it up. It's their club. It's their life.
Right.
And so they just don't understand why normal people don't enjoy it too. And for them, you know, for example, when we were done voting, everyone would just sit around and wait for them to count. They never even thought of, hey, maybe we should have nominations for the next position and speeches while we're waiting for this voting to happen. And later on they did that, but the only reason why they did that is because I went up and talked to the chairman of the meeting, and I said, can't we do it this way? It would speed things up quite a bit. And he's like, oh yeah, that would do things a lot better. I'll go ahead and do that. So, but yeah, it's and another takeaway for, I guess, a general audience is I noticed that there were some Romney people who were running for positions, and the ones who were the Mormon Romney supporters. And full disclosure, I'm a Mormon too, but I'm not a Romney supporter. I'm a Ron Paul supporter. They were the ones that were dropped out first. They got the least number of votes. Mm. So my takeaway from yesterday, my interpretation is that the Romney wing of the party is dead. They have no influence whatsoever. Nobody wants to have anything to do with it.
And I mean that, and I didn't have the necessary background to know who was who in terms of that kind of stuff. And it wasn't clear. It was one of the things that's interesting when people were running for things, as someone who is not like engaged in, someone who knows all these people, and certainly some of the people there knew all of these people and knew their histories, you know, it would have been such a good shortcut piece of information to just know who each one of these guys supported in the Republican primaries. You know, 'cause it would tell you a lot. I mean, it doesn't tell you everything about everybody. There are multiple reasons why somebody might support somebody, but it would be an interesting piece of information that was for the most part missing if you didn't already know.
Yeah, yes, very much so. And I did know who they supported, and that kind of gave me an understanding as to why some people won, why some people didn't. And the Romney people were not winning.
And this seems to be, I mean, I don't know about local party events, but certainly the trend in the last few weeks has been for the Republicans to run away from Romney as fast as they possibly can.
Oh, yeah.
And so in terms of who was winning then, if it wasn't the Romney guys, and of course what we're talking about is specific to one county in Washington state, and who knows what's going on in the rest of the country, but who was winning then if it wasn't Romney guys?
The people who are winning are the old school establishment people who have always been involved in the party. The person who won the county chair position by just four votes, actually.
That was pretty close.
out of 250 people or so. She is someone who's been, who's always been active, hyperactive in the party, and same thing for the other positions of leadership in the county. People who are seen as active, willing to work, and all. Now, and but when people had a choice between, say, someone who's kind of new to the process, but with the Romney campaign, they got dropped out first. Right. And then there was one Paul supporter who won as vice chair. And I think the main reason why he won is not because he not only had support of the Paul people, which were clearly exactly one third of the people in that room. Then he also had support of the establishment because he had a record of having worked in the party in a non-biased way. And so I think that's the reason why he won.
And I unfortunately don't have my notes in front of me that I was taking. But like the people who were coming in second, there were a lot of Santorum folks, right?
Like, for example, the guy who came second as the county party chair, Larry Stickney, he had support of both the Paul people and the Santorum people, who were who had allied, sort of were allied during the county convention last year or earlier this year. And so, yeah, he had support of that faction. That ends up being about half.
Now, that was actually interesting to me because I also attended a little strategy session beforehand, but the alliance of the Paul folks with the Santorum folks was interesting to me because, I mean, I guess they're both sort of anti-establishment, as it were, but to me, they're very different. Like if I rank the Republican presidential candidates for my own personal things, as we've talked before, I'm not sure where I would have put Paul versus Obama versus Johnson if all of them were running in the end. But certainly I felt like once you'd taken Huntsman and Johnson out of the Republican Party, Ron Paul was the best one left standing. But, if I had to choose between Romney and Santorum, there's no question I would pick Romney.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Santorum and Paul are just about the most opposite you can get.
And so I would
imagine we'll find out in 4 years, or actually 3 years, if Rand Paul and Rick Santorum jump in the ring, they're going to be at each other's throats.
And both of them have talked about it. But I was looking at this alliance and I know you want to sort of have a unified front to have sort of a non-establishment, any non-establishment is better than something else. But I was looking at this and saying, I'd prefer the Romney guy or the establishment guy to a Santorum guy.
Yeah. The one thread that joins the two is abortion. Both Paul and Santorum are staunchly anti-abortion, and Romney was seen as being wishy-washy.
From a libertarianish position, that's not necessarily a unifying libertarian principle. That's something that libertarians disagree on. And I'm probably not on the pro-life side of that myself. I like to consider my position more nuanced than either pro-life or pro-choice. But in any case, the Christian right scares me. Let's put it that way.
Oh yeah.
And I like look at these choices and I'm like, I think to me, what I hope for when I look at these kinds of things, and the reason I sort of agreed to participate in this process, is I think it's healthy if you have two mainstream parties that are both reasonable and disagree on strategy, but fundamentally, there's some fundamental goals they agree on, but where there's a real tension between sort of two rational parties with different approaches. And I look at, if the Republican Party is completely taken over by sort of the ideological purists of either the religious variety or the economic variety, or but if they're purists rather than pragmatists, then I see them ending up as, sort of increasingly marginalized. and not going to be able to effectively play the role of a good, loyal opposition that helps things happen. And in some cases, the right answer is that things shouldn't happen. I agree that that's the case. But, you know, I look at this and say, you know, for the Republican Party to actually get back in the game here, they can't be becoming more extreme. They have to be figuring out how to get back and capture the middle again.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are acknowledging, at least I hope a lot of people are acknowledging, that the social issues are what divides people. It's what turns people off. And when somebody goes up there and says, hey, I'm going to go to the churches and I'm going to go and recruit more voters from the churches because if we had everyone in the churches voting for us, we'd win.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people that I talk to are like, no, I don't think so. And he ended up losing.
Yeah,
one position.
Yeah, and there were a number of people who sort of came up there with very, and I think you're right. They mostly lost, but a lot of people were coming up there and just barely lost, with positions that very much were not, hey, let's take what happened in this last election and learn from it, but we're really the people advocating the doubling down. And no, we have to be more conservative and more pure.
That will be the battle.
That will be the battle, and we'll see what happens. I mean, well, there have been a number of studies that have shown, and there's some interesting charts that sort of compare people's left-right spectrum scores that are measured in a variety of different ways versus time since the party was out of power. And the basic trend is that the first election after a party is out of power, you get the most extreme. And then they get less and less extreme and more moderate the longer the party's been out of power, because the desire to win starts trumping the desire to be pure the longer mm-hmm. it has been since you've been in power. We'll see if that trend continues. I mentioned here a couple weeks ago that I don't know if the Republicans are there yet. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if they did go for someone more extreme than Romney in 2016. Now, I'm not predicting that. I also wouldn't be surprised if they picked Jeb Bush, you know, or someone more known to be to sort of advocate more moderate positions. But I'm not sure that they're there. I think that we may need another cycle of somebody who is fairly pure conservative, more so than Romney ever was, to show them how badly they lose if they go that direction.
Yeah. It's only time will tell. But I do have to say, I moved here from Florida several years ago, and so I did live under Governor Jeb Bush.
Yeah.
I do think he was a good governor, but boy, I just don't think this country's ready to, or I don't think it's going to be willing to have another President Bush. I mean, just, two was enough.
If he didn't have the name, is it mainly the association with the previous two Bushes, or is it, or I don't actually know a lot about him other than he has a reputation of being somewhat more moderate than his brother, somewhat smarter than his brother. And a lot of people talked about how he was really the one who was supposed to be president, except he lost his first election at the right time or whatever. And so we got W instead. And that's almost as much depth as I've gotten into. What else would you have to say about Jeb?
Well, I think that I'm not sure if there's a lot of aspects to conservatism that you can. Jeb Bush is probably more fiscally conservative. Mm-hmm. He ran Florida very efficiently. He didn't raise taxes, and he kept the government at growing only moderately. And one thing that's really a big question mark for me is the main question mark is what is his position on foreign policy? Mm. Is he going to be just as willing to go to war? Is he going to be
Is he going to be more like his brother or like his brother. Dad?
Yeah, exactly. I have no idea, and I don't think anyone does.
Right.
I mean, we didn't even know when George W was running. He said that he wanted a war policy and all that, and yet he turned around and became the most interventionist president since FDR.
Yeah, and so. I mean, he's said, and if you read his book, he's said that, you know, for him, everything changed on 9/11, and that was his plan. And he was planning to be a more restrained and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, as soon as 9/11 happened, he basically turned around to the neoconservatives and said, okay, it's you.
No, I mean, then you hear the stories about the first cabinet meeting after he was elected. He was like, okay, what's our plan to go into Iraq?
Yeah. Yep. You hear that too. Okay. So one more comment on this before I go is like, you know, I find this kind of local stuff very fascinating, actually. And I don't know if I think I mentioned when we had you on the show for Johnson before, like I actually went through the Democratic caucus process in 2008. I went through the Republican process in 2012. I've done this PCO thing since. It's fascinating to me, exhausting but fascinating. I'm not sure if, you know, the next time this stuff comes around, whether I'll be willing to go through the whole process again. We'll see. Like, but I found myself thinking as I was leaving the last one that even if I didn't go through as a participant, I would be curious to like do this kind of thing almost as a reporter, you know, just to be there as an observer and see what happens and do both parties. Cause, the Democrats were fascinating too in 2008. And frankly, if I think about, you know, I having participated in both sides, I came out of the Democratic one thinking, oh my God, that made me less willing to vote Democratic than I've ever been in my life. Cause it was, and then I come out of the Republican process thinking almost the same thing. You know, it's like seeing the hot dogs get made, as it were, is very unattractive, no matter which party you're talking about. Well, and in either case, I think what the deal is to me is I don't fit neatly in either the Republican or Democratic bucket. Frankly, I don't fit neatly in the Libertarian bucket either. And so when I get into a thing where what you have is a room full of diehard partisans who are convinced that they're right and the other guy is wrong, you know, and in many cases, not just wrong, but the other guys are sometimes downright evil, then it's like, really? Come on. Like,
I encourage you to go to the local, the monthly meeting once in a while, or at least once, just to see what it's like. They generally will have a local politician, or they'll have local speakers to let people know about what's the upcoming events in the party. And sometimes the meetings, or actually, you know, about half the time, those meetings are pretty boring. Sometimes it can be interesting when you get kind of like an insider's view from, say, Mike Hope, our local legislator, of what's going on in the legislature. That can be pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. You can actually stand there and talk to your representative face to face and see what's going on.
You know, and I might do that just for that reason, just because I've always felt like I have, you know, I pay attention to national and international, but I most of the time, when it comes time to do local elections of various sorts, I'm like, I have no idea. I don't even know what the issues are, you know. And I do a quick like half hour Googling or whatever on each race to try to figure out what's going on. But I don't feel like I have the pulse of, you know, what's going on in the neighborhood, the county, or even the state, to be honest. You know, my attentions are generally at the national or international levels. So that's something I feel like, yeah, I should probably pay more attention locally. And this is one way to do it. Although I must say, I may seek out the other side too to get both perspectives, but we'll see.
And you know, the local stuff is what really affects you more in your daily life. So.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'll be honest, there's a thing, every day when I come home, there's a certain place where I'm like, God damn it, there should be a crosswalk there. You know, somebody's going to get hit. But, you know, anyway. Okay, we're going to take a break, and we'll ease off the politics, and we'll talk about Windows 8 for another segment. And then, by the way, I will be picking up with Yvonne later for the last two segments of the show without Bruce. He wasn't available at this time. He's going to be available later this evening, and I'll pick him up and talk about whatever else is going on. But right now, we'll take a quick break, and we will be back, and we'll talk about Windows 8 and Bruce's experiences with it. So after this. Okay, Bruce, we're back. So, you know, we've, you know, when you were on the show the first time, you're like, hey, I'd love to come back and talk about Windows 8 because I'm getting ready to install it or whatever. And, and you know, I'm a Mac guy, even at work, for the last at least 2 years, maybe longer, I've had a Mac at work as well.
Really?
Yeah. Yvonne's primarily.
I don't know many workplaces that like to have that.
My particular workplace, and I won't mention it on the show, although people can figure it out really easily, started allowing it as a choice a couple years ago. So anybody coming in could get either a Windows machine or a Mac. They've actually pulled back slightly from that, in the last few months, because, they did an expense calculation and figured out it was like a couple $100 more expensive for the Macs and blah, blah, blah. And so they've pulled back, so only certain job families can do it right now without like extra manager approval. But there's still lots of people using Macs and lots of people using Windows too. But yeah, I've had a Mac at work for the last couple years. So the last Windows I have actually hands-on used is Windows XP. It's been a while. Mm-hmm. And Yvonne used to work at Hewlett-Packard, so he has all kinds of Windows experience, but he uses a Mac at home too and has not tried Windows 8 yet. And so all I know is that you installed it and you have some thoughts, so take me through the process. And what happened and how did it go?
Well, let me tell you, it's the biggest change of Windows since Windows 95. And it is very, very different. And people are going to hate it, and people are going to bloody want to kill it. I don't think anyone who's an experienced Windows user is going to try this and say, oh, this is wonderful. This is what I've been waiting for.
Do you think is that like an initial impression that goes away once you start to use it? Or is that just a, oh my God, they broke it?
I've been using it for over a month and I learned to deal with it. I've kind of had to rewire my brain to figure out, okay, there's these two environments, but let me just,
go through the
installation and all that stuff. Yeah. So I had a, my kids broke the laptop that they use, and so I went ahead and got a new laptop. And I noticed that Microsoft was saying that if you have a new laptop or if you buy a new computer, you can get Windows 8 for $15. I was like, huh, can't beat that. So I'll give it a try. And so I went ahead and got it on the first day. And oh, by the way, when I downloaded it, there was no verification that I had actually bought a new computer. So, if you are kind of shady on the honesty side, you can go ahead and buy Windows 8 for $15. But the normal price is $40, which is still the cheapest Windows ever.
Yeah, and this is interesting, them following, like, Windows used to be hundreds of dollars. The Mac operating system used to typically be $130, something like that. A couple years ago, they dropped it to, like, $20, $25. And I guess this is Windows following that cue. Because, and I think part of that trend has, by the way, been that people want people that, whether it's Apple or Microsoft, they would much prefer it if everyone was running the newest version of their system rather than having to support, you know, old versions going back years and years. So this is a move to encourage people to update. Whereas if it's, you know, $100, $200, people are going to be like, why do I need that?
Yeah, exactly. But I think they're going to have to make it like Chrome. They're going to have to make it, they're going to have to give it away. Okay. I don't think people are going to be buying this. I mean, this is too big of a change. But anyway, I downloaded the OS. Actually, I put a solid state drive in the laptop because I don't want the kids breaking that too. They've broken two hard disks in the past.
I feel your pain.
So I got the solid state drive and I got the installed Windows 8, and it installed wonderfully. It picked up all the hardware, all the drivers that it needed. It was very nice in that sense. And one thing that the main change for Windows 8 is that it's a unification of three operating systems, really. They want to have a seamless experience between Windows Phone, Windows RT, which is the tablet version, and the desktop Windows. They all have this start menu where there's tiles, and these tiles have active information that change, and you can see kind of like the basic information, what's going on inside of the app without actually starting the app.
So this is like your newest email message or the weather or things like that?
Exactly. You know, pictures, it'll kind of show a random picture in there. It'll show like the news or the last song that you listened to and what's going on with your friends from your social media, things like that. And yeah, you know, I've never wanted to just sit here and look at my start screen.
Okay.
I don't sit. When I start Windows, I want to go straight to what I want to do. So I don't really find that useful. It's more annoying than anything else. But it is nice to have all of my main apps right on one screen where I can just click on them and go right to it rather than have to go to along a menu. But then again, in Windows 7 and earlier, you had like a little quick start icon bar at the bottom. So my top 10 apps, I'd just be one click away. But this is a little bit different. The main thing is that since they want to unify all these interfaces, you end up with, they glop on a touch interface onto a laptop or onto a desktop computer. And
even if that desktop computer has no touch interface.
Exactly. And it's so annoying because touch is not the same thing as mouse or trackball or trackpad.
No.
It's, you use things differently. For example, to close an application in Windows now, you have to take your mouse up to the top of the window and drag down to the bottom. Whereas,
say that again.
You take your mouse,
yeah,
you up to the top of the screen, and then you have to drag it down. You click and drag to the bottom of the screen.
Now, what's that do? Is that closing?
That closes the window rather than just clicking the X in the corner.
You can't. Okay, so you have to sort of move the window off to the side, off the bottom, to make
it
go away.
You have to move it from the, you basically have to move it down. You kind of like you're grabbing it and swiping it down, and that closes the application.
And then it doesn't just move it out of the way where you can bring it back. It actually closes it through the action of moving
it. It closes it. You can move things out of the way. You can have two applications running on your screen at the same time, but you only have two options. You can have it so that it's running like on the left fifth of your screen or the right fifth of your screen, but that's it. It's not a windowing environment.
Right. And this is the one new, the touchish environment, but there's still the regular window environment too, right? And that's one of the things that they coexist and it's...
Yes, you can go straight to the desktop and you can have an experience just like every previous version of Windows, except the start button is missing. They took it away. Now, if you want to make Windows 8 look like Windows 7, you can actually buy an app and add it back. But I've deliberately not done that. I've wanted to see what is it about.
Because you're trying to learn the Windows 8 way of doing things.
Exactly. Right? I want to see why do they think those user interface people down in Redmond, are they so intelligent? They must have come up with this to think that this is superior than anything else they've done in the past. Well, after using this for a month, I disagree. I think that what has happened is marketing has taken over industrial design, user interface design, and their engineering people, their software people, because I think they've looked at Google, they've looked at Apple, and they go, oh, they've got these app stores and they're making money left and right. Why can't we do that? And so Microsoft wants to do their app store too. And so there's an app store in Windows. And what's in that app store is just a bunch of tablet-based applications. I haven't been able to find any desktop-based applications because when you have a tablet interface, the icons are big, the buttons are big because it's for finger touch.
Right.
I don't care about big stuff on the screen. I want to be able to cram in as much information on my screen as possible. Like, for example, there's a nice what is it called? It's the Khan Academy app. It's right. A really nice app, but it's limited. It's just a tiny slice of what you can get by just going to the Khan Academy website. And it's the same thing with every other app. So yeah, why would I even want to mess with these?
Well, and that's interesting apps to me. Like Apple introduced an app store on their desktop computers too, but it's all apps that were built for the desktop. Now, a few of them are obviously inspired by iPad apps or iPhone apps, and I actually find those annoying. But there's because I'm like, I'm on a 27-inch iMac screen sitting at home. It's not the same as my phone. but
they're all full screen apps. I don't want a full screen app. I can't even see a clock in the corner. Right. They get rid of that.
Yeah, Apple also introduced a full screen functionality because they're trying to be more tablet-like too. And I find most of those things annoying because it really is a different thing. And like, I want a different set of things if I'm sitting at a desktop or a laptop than I am if I'm on a touch device. But, you know, most of those things you could turn off. And even in the Apple App Store, like I said, there are plenty of actual desktop apps there. There's just a few that are obviously inspired by touch, but there are plenty that are real desktop apps. So it's interesting to me that, like, you mentioned that they were doing this touch interface because they wanted the app store. You can build an app store without having a touch interface. There's no reason they couldn't have done an app store for regular old Windows apps. So
I know. I can just figure is that Windows 8 is so new that there's just literally nothing out there,
right?
And they have to put something in the store. It's like, just to give you an example, there's not even a Facebook app, not even a Facebook, you know, touch tablet based app.
Right.
And that's the number one website in the world. I mean, come on. Now, of course, there's third party people who have kind of glopped on and created a Facebook app. But, you know, as soon as Facebook creates their own app, all those other little ones will go away. You know, there's a Skype app. Of course, Skype is owned by Microsoft. And
yep.
By the way, I'm speaking to you using the Skype app.
Ooh, and it works?
Apparently.
So, okay. So you spent quite a bit of time on the negative. So anything positive to say about Windows 8? Or yes. Are you like regretting you ever put it on?
No, I running it, there are some very good things, and I can tell you about that right now. I have a bunch of kids in the house, and teenagers included, and they have been able to get around anything that I've been able to put on as a third-party parental control app.
Yeah.
NetNanny, Norton Online Family, and on Windows 7 does have a parental control thing, but there's features that it doesn't have any. It's not totally useful. So, but now they've got a really good parental control app, because not only can you control the schedule that they can be a computer, you can control the number of hours per day they get a computer, even different hours per day, different days of the week. And you can have whitelists, blacklists for websites, apps, and they you can even grant permission via email. So if they go, they try to go to a website and I'm not allowed to, that, you know, I get an email and I can grant it. Work. And so given that Windows 8 is only $40 and it's much better than any of these other parental control ones, so I'd say that just for the parental control features, it's worth the price.
Okay.
I even get an email once a week giving me a summary of how many hours each day they were on the computer, or what were the top websites, what were the top apps that they used. It's really nice.
Nice. So I'll tell you, it's sort of an aside, but like my daughter's now 17 and we've removed all controls and permissions at this point and let her to do her thing. But our approach when she was younger was, you know, was we sometimes used the controls to like try to encourage, you know, hey, everything shuts down at 11 or midnight or whatever, you got to go to sleep. But for the most part, we didn't put other controls on it. But what I did was, and this was something I did on my own on the Mac. I didn't use a software for it, but I set something up that at random intervals, several times an hour, would just take a screenshot and put it somewhere where we could see it. So our approach was no restrictions. You can do whatever you want. You can go see whatever you want, but we'll see it. So, you know, and that generally worked okay. I mean, eventually she got an iPhone and we didn't have anything on there. And so at that point, you have to just throw up your hands and say, okay, there's nothing you can do. They're going to do what they're going to do. But, and frankly, kids are smart. They will get around almost every restriction we did try to ever use of the built-in restrictions. She got around. She figured out the bugs and the tricks and the little thing that you could do to bypass it. And, you know, the screenshots always work because I just did that a different way. But all the other things, the thing that was supposed to automatically shut it off at midnight, nah. Right past all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, so with this built in right in with the interface, right in with the OS, it's I haven't been able to get around it. I'm not sure. Let me maybe. Maybe my son's not as smart as your daughter, but so far it's worked.
we'll see how it goes. They pass tricks around. So Windows 8 is true. New though, so you may have a head start on them.
All he has to do is just go look on YouTube and see about any kind of tricks and stuff, which is what he usually does. And speaking of YouTube, if you want to see a real something funny, just go and do a search on. For Windows 8 first time user or Windows 8 first time or frustration, because there are people have put hundreds of videos on YouTube, maybe hundreds, but dozens of videos on YouTube of people when they plop them down in front of the Windows 8 for the first time and they just can't figure it out, and they get so frustrated. What is this? And it can be quite entertaining to see that.
We'll have to take a look. Any last thoughts on Windows 8 or anything else for that matter before we say goodbye to you and back up with Yvonne?
I saw on your Twitter feed someone asked you about a photo, and I was like, oh, what's that? So I went ahead and looked at it.
You were breaking up. You were breaking up a little bit. What was that?
Someone asked you several weeks ago via Twitter about Momoto, which is the life logging camera that you wear.
Oh, right.
And I looked into that, and I didn't ask permission or anything. I just went ahead and supported it. So I'm looking forward to getting my Mimoto camera sometime in March.
So this is one of these things that you like wear it around your neck and it like takes a picture once a minute or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I've mentioned one of these things a few times because like, yeah, I've had a webcam for years and I've had available on the internet for, you know, people can look into my office or sometimes I point it out the window or whatever. I've had all of these things going. I like keeping track of things. I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm all over that. Let's do the time lapse of my day and my week. And but the wife is like, no, you're not doing that. I think it's cool.
My wife reacted the same way. I'm just going to get it in the mail and I'm going to put it on and she's going to ask, what is that? That's my camera. She may not like it, but I'm going to try it out. And so my point is, we can do another one of these in 6 to 8 months and I can tell you what my experiences are for the Mimoto.
That sounds great. Okay. Well, thanks Bruce for joining us again. It's been great having you and, we will undoubtedly talk to you again and maybe I'll see you around at some of these local events as well.
That'd be awesome.
So thanks for joining us. We're going to take another break and I will pick up with Yvonne for the second half of the show. He was, like I said, he wasn't available at the same time Bruce was. So we had the interview with Bruce and then we'll figure out what Yvonne wants to talk about in a little while. It'll be a few hours for me. For you guys listening, it'll be a minute or two. So we'll be back after this. Goodbye.
Bye.
Back and Bruce is gone and now Yvonne's here. Hello Yvonne.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah, we had
so
an
I couldn't be on during those segments.
We talked about how, you know, the Republican Party is in some ways dysfunctional at the local level in terms of being inefficient and not getting stuff done, and how it looks like the party still probably hasn't quite learned the lesson yet about, you know, where to go, but there's still a big battle to be seen. Like locally here in Washington state, the sort of mainstream Republicans who've been in charge for decades won out just barely over sort of the insurgents from
Baggers.
From you know, people who supported Santorum, people who supported Ron Paul, et cetera.
Right.
Everybody else, other than the mainstreams, just barely. They put in a fairly good showing, but the mainstreamers won out, but just barely. And that's here in Washington State, and that's the battle you're going to see all over the country in terms of do you have for 2016, do you go more radical or do you go more moderate? Anyway, so that was interesting. We also talked about Windows 8. Apparently, it sucks.
Yeah, that's what I keep hearing from everybody, that it really sucks.
Yeah, so, okay, Bruce agreed that, yeah, there were a couple things he liked about it with parental controls, but basically it was a pain in the ass.
Okay. Well, so I haven't tried it, so therefore, but as far as I hear, that they hear the same stuff. So
we have one actual topic for today with us, and it's not like a super serious newsy topic, and then we'll see where we go. We might not even have anything else after that. I don't know.
Who knows? But it's this whole Facebook thing, okay?
The way you introduced it to me, like when you first started talking about it, was, okay, remember when you used to get all these emails forwarded you from people?
right. You got the cause. If you send this email 100 times, Microsoft will send money for this cause. Or please, you know, if you don't forward this, you have a streak of bad luck for the rest of your life or something.
This kid wants 1,000 postcards before he dies of cancer.
Right. And now this is like, I don't know. It seems like it's the stream of like, I don't know Twitter, because I don't really go on Twitter as much, but I'm assuming that Twitter is probably getting its fair share of this shit.
It gets some of these, but like, yeah, your point you made was like, look, all that stuff that you used to always get in email
is now on Facebook.
Now, and I pointed out, and we talked about I mentioned to you offline that I now only get those kinds of forwards from one person, and that's your dad.
Yes, that sounds right. Well, no, I get them from multiple people, unfortunately. That's not just my dad.
Most of mine have long ago stopped. Like, I went through a phase where when people sent me that kind of stuff, I was like, just no. Please leave me out. And for the most part, they stopped. So, like, I'll get an occasional, very rare forward of something that looks interesting to somebody, but not like the kind of volume of these chain letter things that you used to get like 5-10 years ago. But I can't open Facebook without seeing them. You asked about Twitter. It's a little bit better, but you still, it's a lot better. I guess it depends who you follow.
Follow, and it also depends on who's getting on Twitter. And it's like everything, okay? I'm telling you. I mean, all this shit is migrating to this crap. But here's the other thing I'll tell you, aside from that, which I'll get back to a little bit. A few minutes ago, I was trying to get my wife, honey, come over here, and she didn't come over to see this, okay? But I have these friend recommendations that are just weird. I don't know what else to describe it.
Are you getting spammy ones?
They're not spammy ones, okay? It's the actual Facebook friend recommendations.
Is it actually like a friend of a friend, or is it like completely out of the blue?
No, they're not friends of friends.
See,
okay,
I've started to get these completely out of the blue. Not the friend recommendations.
Yeah, but
they
are all kind of half naked women.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like I've started to get these friend requests. I haven't seen them on the friend of friend recommendations.
I'm not talking about a friend request.
Okay.
I'm talking. For a while,
I thought, you know, all these hot young women actually just want me.
Yes. Okay. No, I am talking about the friend recommendations that Facebook puts on the page. Okay. And for whatever the hell damn reason, I'm like looking at them like, how the fuck do I know these women? Okay. And why does Facebook think I want to be friends with them when, I mean, yes, I'm friends with a number of good looking women, but they're actually my friends. Friends, we have friends in common.
I just clicked on the, you know, people you might know thing, and
right.
Like, I'm trying to see, like, I'm not seeing it on mine. Like,
now, it's saying that this woman is from Puerto Rico. Okay, all right, that I'm looking at right now, but she's only got, according to this, 5 friends.
So I'm scrolling down, and
by the way, the 6 pictures of her are all like basically on one. Okay, she's not naked simply because she's putting her hand in front of her nipple.
Okay, so what I'm saying, I'm looking at mine, and I scroll down past the first page and a half. I scroll down past the first page and a half, and they're all, like, listing mutual friends. Like, I've got mutual friends. And in fact, I just sent a friend request to one of them, because I was like, oh, okay, I know that person. But, like, I do have somebody that doesn't show up anything on the second page. No common friends. So I'm opening them up right now. And it is female.
Yeah.
Not naked pictures or anything like this, but it's from somebody who has an official website that where they sell tickets and videos and things like that. So it's clearly like it's got to be sponsored in some way. And I'm guessing that's what the women that you're talking about, they're sponsored. There's somebody like paying to get that in front of you.
But there's
and it's
like,
not
it only
really
shows 6 friends. It's just the name of a person. It's not advertising anything. I don't know.
I'm clicking on this one, and you know, she's got pictures of like a farm and like some vacation. And
okay, no. Mine are more interesting than that. But you know, but it's just. I mean, I am trying to figure out what.
Hello, did I lose you? Yvonne.
Okay.
You're back. You're back. Hello.
Yeah. I'm still trying to figure out. I mean, why is Facebook thinking that these are people I want to be friends with, I guess?
Who knows?
I don't know. I mean, it used to be that the recommendations, and if you remember the original concept of Facebook, it had to be you were like invited, and you were like from a friend of a friend kind of a thing. You know, you couldn't just go and like grab random people. You had to have some common connection. Well, I guess maybe both Puerto Rico has a common connection, but geez, that's awfully thin. I mean, why the hell is it telling me everybody in the state of Florida for to be friends of mine, for God's sakes, since I live here?
Uh-huh.
Or the city of Boca, I mean, for that matter. I mean, if I go by that tenuous a thing.
Yeah, but, I don't know. I find the original thing that you were talking about more interesting in terms of the people sending stuff around. Because, like, look, I just opened my Facebook, and let me take a sample.
Let's see. What do you got?
Most recent. And I'm scrolling down. There's some pictures of people and some other stuff that doesn't fall into this category. But I got someone with an image with the Albert Einstein quote about everybody is a genius, but if you judge a fish on its ability to climb a tree, it will live its whole life believing that it's stupid.
But you see, that's typically the kind of shit I'm talking about. And then, like, you know, email
and then, let's see.
Shit.
We have we've got the trending article about the New York police officer giving boots to that homeless guy. Then, you know, people's pictures. You know, maybe Sunday is a slow day for these. Oh, I got a picture, one of these pictures about bear in the woods. Yes, they do, with a picture of a bear doing a certain thing. You know,
what is the bear doing?
You've never heard this phrase?
Oh, yes. Okay. Now I get it. Okay. All right.
You know, I'm seeing less of these than I usually do. Actually, as I scroll down here, I like
it's just a week ago.
It's a slow day. I don't know, but usually you're right. I see these things all the time. These stupid little things being passed around. Click like if you recognize this thing.
Right, three most difficult things to do in the world. You can't count here above. I don't know something. Now, and what are these some double e-card things?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You don't know what I'm talking about? Ah, gosh. It's these cards that that keep floating around. Like, I don't know where people get them from. Look, I'm going to share one right now. It's just, there you go! I got a recommendation! Another naked girl! No friends attached!
You know, I don't get these.
What the hell?! Victoria Garcias. Okay, all right. That's the recommendation. She's only wearing a bikini top. Okay, I'm like, what the hell? Let's go ahead. And no common friends.
Oh, yeah. You the one you just shared, none of these 10 children get the awesomeness of their aunt. Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. They've got this stupid little old-timey picture and then some clever thing. And yeah. I'm happier that they send this stuff in Facebook than they send it to me in email.
Look, I am looking at an entire list of friend recommendations. Facebook is
giving me right now. You're just obsessing on these friend recommendations.
Well, I'm telling you right now, it's just a day. It really hit me. Look, and I'm looking at an entire list of people where I have not related to any of these people whatsoever. No connection. None.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. I scroll down my list, they all have common friends. Almost all of them have come in front.
Almost all of them. Okay.
Almost all.
So, I don't know who makes stupid cards anyway. Is there a website where these people get them from?
I'm sure there is. Yeah, click on one of them. I'm sure it goes.
No,
or some. It has a caption. SomeCards.com.
I don't know. Okay, I just went to SomeCards.com. Here we go. free e-cards, funny cards, greeting cards, birthday e-cards.
Very exciting. So anyway, look.
Yeah, so I guess they get them all from here.
Yes, this stuff, I'm very happy that this stuff has migrated from my mail to Facebook, where it's
But it's not that's happened. I'm getting this shit now from both places.
Oh, well, you're just too bad. You suck. I don't know what to tell you.
You know, I guess it's that I can't get them from people who I'm not friends with, I guess, on Facebook.
I guess probably not. Yeah.
I mean, we do get the stupid commercials and I get the goofy friend recommendations. But other than that, I mean, unless I make friends with them, I mean, it doesn't really matter.
Right. Yes.
Okay. But I don't know.
Are you bothered? Are you bothered, Yvonne?
I am bothered by this whole damn thing. I mean, I find it that, you know, first of all, so we get a medium of communication that's actually supposed to be a social network for you to share, like, maybe some witty, intelligent ideas. And for the most part, people just share crap.
You got to stop there. Like, you think Facebook is for witty and intelligent ideas?
Well, I would hope that you would try to narrow it to that kind of shit. Or at least something that somebody may find, like, you know...
Did I lose you again, Yvonne? You keep cutting out.
I keep getting like warnings from my firewall on this computer. Okay, but I don't.
Okay,
like...
well, you're back. Keep talking.
Okay, so I'm like, I think I get some better interaction with the people who are my friends that is happening on Facebook than it happened with other mediums. Okay. All right.
And I'd agree. Like even right now, like I've had my blog for forever, essentially.
Yes. Yeah. Pretty
much. I get more reaction from it via Facebook than I have from the blog itself. Usually than I have on Twitter. I mean, like, I'm much more likely to get a comment or a response or whatever on Facebook than anywhere else. Twitter, mm-hmm. Twitter is probably second. People actually coming to my blog itself and leaving a comment there, third. A distant third. You know, so this is, you know, these are where the people are. They're where they are engaging. And most of the interpersonal communication has moved from... You know, most of my email now, if I look at my email, you know, it's like the, you know, the receipts I get from people. And it's like, it's business to consumer is most of my email at this point. Yes, there's some spam, but even of the non-spam, you know, the stuff that back in the day, before Facebook and all these other things, you know, if I wanted to talk to a friend or let a friend know what I was doing, you know, assuming they weren't right next to me and I could talk to them, you know, I'm sending them an email. You know, it's rare these days that there's, you know, much in-depth stuff on email. I mean, I will still use it for some stuff, but usually when I'm sending it, I'm not like emailing somebody to say, hey, I had a good day, how are you, blah, blah, blah.
Right, I mean, you're not going to send that.
I sent some emails in the last 24 hours to my dad and my stepmom to ask what my sister might want for Christmas. I sent an email to my sister asking what she might want for Christmas. You know, little things like that, but there used to be, like, I remember back in the day actually spending time writing emails back and forth to keep in touch with people. That doesn't happen anymore. You will look at what they posted on Facebook.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like right now, I mean, I use it mainly for business communication. I mean, really, like, in terms of social communication.
Work email's a whole other ball of wax. I mean, yeah. I'm just talking about my personal email now. Obviously, I've also
got work. I'm talking about my personal email. Huh? I only really use it for personal business.
Okay.
I mean, for the most, I mean, I transact business for the condo association that I'm on the board. I will send requests to businesses. I will maybe sometimes a communication with my friends. I'll forward a document. I'll send something. But honestly, like in terms of like usual communication, if I really want to get a hold of somebody, I mean, I will text them, call them, send a message on Facebook. Actually, that's one thing. When I've had friends of mine that have been coming out of town or somebody lately, either they have texted me or sent me a message on Facebook, not an email.
Right.
So,
yeah, that's where it's moved. I mean, like, you know, I still resist that. I still resist that a bit. I mean, I've done some communication back and forth with people on Facebook. I've done some communication back and forth with people on Twitter. I still prefer email, and that's partially because, like, I like archiving my stuff. I like keeping it forever. I like keeping it for reference. And it's harder to do that with the communications elsewhere. I mean, there's, you know, Facebook's not deleting them, but that's not necessarily the easiest thing in the world to go back and figure out, you know, what was going on at a specific time in the past.
And they're not guaranteeing the record retention.
And they're not guaranteeing it. They're not guaranteeing it doesn't change. You know, the other, you know, if you're doing comments back and forth on a post, the people can edit them. There's all kinds of stuff like that. And at Twitter, it's even worse. If you're looking for something that's older than, you know, the last day, you know, it's hard. It's hard to, you know, dig that stuff up, because it's designed to be very ephemeral, and so I resist that a little bit. But I at the same time, I acknowledge I'm the oddball here. All the normal people in the world now, Facebook is how you communicate to people on a social basis. You know, a few people use Twitter for that, but Twitter is mainly it's more not for like one-on-one communication with friends. It's not, you might follow your friends, but it's mainly, you know, you follow people who are interesting, whether you know them or not. But Facebook really is about where you have that. Here's your connection to all the people, you know, as friends. And, that's where that communication is going on right now. And of course, you know, Facebook is loving that they have that huge feed of information. You know, they may be still figuring out exactly the best ways to monetize it, but god damn it, you know, what they're doing is sucking in that fire hose of everything that everybody is doing with everybody.
And I guess we'll have to deal with the amount of like crap that we used to be getting in another way. We're going to get it in this medium. It's just going to be somewhat different, like some stupid EE cards and deck kind of crap, I guess.
Yeah, well, and you know, the other aspect of that sort of everything on Facebook kind of thing that I was mentioning, you know, I'll repeat this because I've said this for years and years, but I noticed a few people making posts out of it this week, and I'm not going to remember the names of who posted, but you know, the whole notion of, you know, I remember the first time it really somewhat crystallized to me as I went to an after-school event at my daughter's class, school, when she was maybe 12, 13, somewhere around that. So quite a few years ago. But it was like one of these, you know, online safety for teens. They had some expert come in, and they started going on about, you know, oh my God, you gotta be super careful with what you post because these pictures are forever. And, you know, you may think that, you know, that drunken picture is funny when you're posting it, but years down the road, some employer's going to see that, and it's not going to be good then. And my reaction then was like, look, you may be right in this very short transitional period right now, but you know, when the kids who are teenagers or less now, by the time they're entering the job market and most of the old fuddy-duddies have retired or gone away or died, you know, this is going to be the norm. This is going to be the expectation. Now, as long as those kids have to deal with people at the higher levels of their companies who grew up before all this stuff, there'll be a bit of that effect. But, like, at some point, the kids who are teenagers now are going to be in charge. And they're going to be, the reaction is much more going to be like, if you don't have that kind of stuff in your history,
then what kind of moron are you?
Yeah, what kind of idiot? Yeah. What, are you hiding something? You know, were you actually so straight-laced in high school that you never did anything fun?
Right.
What's wrong with you?
Right.
Or if you did do stuff, you're obviously hiding it, so something's, what the hell? You know? So, you know, and of course there's, You know, there have been some controversy of certain places like requiring you to give Facebook access as part of the interview process. And Facebook's been trying to say, no, that's not cool. But there have been a few places that have done that. And I agree. That's sort of like, you know, if I'm looking for a job, I fully accept that tons and tons of my stuff is public. Like, I'm not even on Facebook. I post this shit on the public internet on my blog. That,
for example, but I have.
But I still, like, I wouldn't want to give, like, I wouldn't want to, by default, make my employer a Facebook friend or my boss or a whatever.
Oh, I don't think I actually have anybody from work who is
so
a Facebook
friend. So, I, for the longest time, went through a policy of, like, you know, I'm not going to. Facebook friends and work don't mix. I'm not gonna friend you if you're at work. And then that started to break down when people left my employer. And then I'm like, oh, okay, then you can be my friend. And then people who were still at work started sending me friend requests. And so I ended up with the policy of, like, look, if I know you and you send me a friend request, even if you're at work, I'm gonna accept. I'm not going to send friend requests.
I have not done that.
And the reason I do that, like, if I use Facebook differently, I might think twice about that. But the fact is, all I use Facebook for is posting links to my blog, and that shit's public anyway.
No, I agree. But I'm like, I share, like, I don't know, family pictures and other stuff and whatever, whatnot on a regular basis. And to be honest with you, I actually do not have anybody who is a current work employee. I have some ex employees that are my friends, but that's, like, I think, actually, to be honest with you, I think, like, ex employees from the current company, one, people who I used to work with from my old job, I actually have a lot of them as friends, okay? Because we don't work together anymore. But I'll tell you, I'm like, I am still, like, very strict. I'm like, no, I don't want, no. I don't want them.
Yeah, no. And like I said, I did that for the longest
and
time.
And I've gotten friend requests from some of them, and I've rejected them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I've just said flat out, they've asked me at the office why, and I said, we work together, and I'm not friending you on Facebook.
Yeah, like I said, I used to do that. At this point, I'll accept them if they come up, but I don't initiate them. And all they get from me on Facebook is the stuff I post publicly anyway, so it makes no difference. Except,
oh, the heck!
I start
you used
seeing
to have a
their
webcam
stuff.
Almost like stuck on your head, for God's sake.
The
webcam's
live right now.
I mean, you've never had a problem with
you
this.
You can go to my website and you can wave at me right now, this very second.
Exactly right.
But so the only thing if they friend me is I start seeing their stuff.
Right.
So, and if they want me to see their stuff, I'm okay. Whatever.
Well, I'm looking at the time, so we've had a pretty lengthy segment on this. Bottom line is that we've discussed this. That basically,
we've discussed Facebook.
Shit's moving off email. It's going into here. You got to live with it. That's pretty much the bottom line.
And everybody's life is on Facebook.
Pretty much.
And, you know, so, and I don't know.
And it's not on Google Plus.
It's not on Google
Spaces or whatever the heck it is.
There's a few people sticking to Google Plus, but, like, it's very, you know, it's not like. It ain't taking off.
No, it ain't taking off.
And you know, someday though, there will be a rise and fall of Facebook. Facebook may still be on the way up.
Oh, I totally agree.
And it's not going to be 50 years down the line. It's going to be a lot sooner than that.
Well, think about all the stuff that we've had rise and fall over the last 30 years. I'm sure it'll probably be in less than 10. I mean, think about it, like 7 years ago, and everybody's like all the young people, because older people didn't touch it. I mean, I know I did. MySpace, for example, how it like soared and crashed, you know, almost as quickly. So yeah, I mean, I don't doubt it that something else will come along that probably replace this.
Well, and not just the social networks. I mean there was Usenet before that, and you can go to offline things too. I mean, it's not just online world. I mean, typically these things have a lifetime. They're
the AOL chat rooms.
AOL chat rooms.
Oh, my gosh.
But, you know, the one thing that I can say about Facebook, though, is that they've learned the lesson of a lot of these things, and they've got the lock-in factor going. And it's much harder to break that lock-in factor. I mean, just look at the beginning of the show that you missed. We were talking about Windows 8, but Microsoft still has this incredible lock-in on business computing and a huge swath of home computing, and moving away from it is hard. And so even though, I think a lot of people agree that Microsoft's been on the decline for a long time now, they're still huge.
Yep.
They're still a very significant portion of people's computing lives, and probably will be for quite some time. I think the end there is in sight, but it's going to take a while to die, and maybe they'll have a renaissance. Who knows? That could happen. But there is a cycle here. And Facebook, though, because of the huge adoption they've had, and because of the huge amount of engagement from people, and the amount of stuff people have put in there, and you have occasional people saying, okay, I'm done with Facebook. But, it takes a lot to leave, and it takes a lot to, because essentially when you remove yourself from Facebook, you're isolating yourself.
I agreed. I mean, I've had some people that have done that, and then it's like really...
It's like they don't exist anymore.
Yeah. I just don't know anything about those people anymore, period.
Yeah, and so it's harder than it was. We'll see. But at some point, either Facebook will overreach and do something that really pisses people off, or somebody else will come along with something better, and it'll be compelling enough that, people will start moving in mass, and there'll be word of mouth, and people will oh my God, you got to go over there, so it'll happen. Anyway, you're right. This is a show.
Yeah,
So thanks for Bruce for joining us on the first half of the show. You should listen to it, Yvonne. It was pretty fun.
I will.
And thanks, Yvonne. And as usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with questions, comments, thoughts, suggestions, things you think we should talk about. Because, with the election over, things are kind of slow right now. So suggestions are welcome.
We'll get some stuff on the cliff going on probably next couple of weeks. Right now, they're just we'll probably heat up in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah,
so we'll see.
Yeah, I know. But if anybody has any suggestions, things you would like to hear our takes on, please feel free to send them our way. Otherwise, that's it. Tell your friends. Facebook, we were just talking about Facebook. After I release this show, I want to see all kinds of people posting on Facebook about how awesome we are. Or, I guess, how much we suck.
I don't know. We'll see.
But, I guess. Whatever. Anyway, thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you later. Goodbye. Bye-bye.